Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I travel around having conversations with business leaders, entrepreneurs, and those who invest and support and guide the entrepreneurial community here in Orlando. Today, I'm having a conversation with Joe Raymond, who is the founding partner and CEO of a company called RVR Consulting. So we're going to have conversations about starting up, growing, and exiting businesses. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Joe to the show. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you start out telling us with a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So entrepreneur through and through. Early started out. In fact, I wouldn't know how to work at a company for somebody. So it's been years and years since I've done that. So most of my experience has been through trial and error, and I learned quickly early on that you need to get some people to support you to be able to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you take us through the early years of Joe in your entrepreneurial journey? Like, did you always know you were an entrepreneur? You said you couldn't really be a normal, you know, employee. Were you always an entrepreneur? Talk to us about your early days.
Sure. So, I mean, you could go back to third grade, mowing lawns. So that was on my own. But I've worked a lot of jobs. I did everything from cleaning toilets to sweeping floors in the early days. And that led through college. And then after college, I needed to find a job. But the objective was always to start something here in Florida. I went to Rollins College, so the job was always come back to Rollins, make enough money, start a business. I knew, though, that one of my weak sides was the sales side, and that I had a college buddy that was really, really good at it. Sold books in the hills of West Virginia successfully, so anyone that can do that, sure as heck can be good on the sales in Central Florida. So went back to New Jersey. Got a job, made some money to start a business in Florida. So 2 years later, between getting married and moving, came back to Florida to start a staffing company.
Okay.
The staffing company, we decided to go the franchise route. We did that because funding, when you're starting up a company, funding's very important. Insurances are very important. Who's going to do the payroll and back office, very important. We felt that my partner could sell and I can operate a business, so we figured that's a good combination to get started. So we started, but really, and the reason we located here, we said, you know what, there's 200 staffing companies in Orlando, must be a good market, must be a place that we want to be, and someday we're going to be number one. In fact, we did our business plan, and the only thing we got right in our first business plan was that we exited 10 years later. That's the only thing. Numbers were wrong. You know, how we were going to do it, what we were going to do, how quickly things were going to do. And I will tell you, the first 3 or 4 years were very challenging. The biggest challenge over those 3 to 4 years was thinking that we knew it all. We tried to expand into Tampa and open a location. We tried to sell franchises, everything except what our core business was. Although we worked 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we were growing at a pace. But I wasn't taking a paycheck. It took 3 years before I got my first paycheck. 3 years. So that's one of the things that when you go to start a business, you need to think about. You're not getting a paycheck, especially if your staff needs to get a paycheck. So, 3 years into it, 5 credit cards, 3 mortgages. One day we didn't even know where the next check was going to come to pay bills. And we looked at each other. Some miraculously, we got a check in. And we were able to pay our bills, and we looked at each other and said, we never want to get in this position again. We got out of Tampa. We hired some advisors. We hired people from a marketing consulting company. And because I never saw the value in what we were doing, it was like, what do my clients really want? And so what we wound up doing was He showed us this way of looking at your clients, looking at your buying, what are their influence, how does what you do affect their business, and how do you make their business better? Because it's always like you go in and you meet a client, you're like, oh, what makes it so successful? Me. You know, why is it going to be good? Because I have the greatest staff and service and greatest product. And you don't realize that everyone says the same thing. When you go in, you should be asking, hey, let's talk about what your strategic initiatives. Let's talk about what you see as your key roadblocks. And then how do we take those roadblocks and turn them, you know, get rid of them? And what does my solution have to do? And being in the people business, 95% of problems in companies are people related. So once we brought those in, we brought advisors to hold us accountable. We paid them. And then the company had a dramatic turnaround. So the first 5 years was crazy. We were growing at a slow pace. The second 5 years, through having good consultants, having a good advisory group to manage it, to hold us accountable as a board of advisors, we accelerated our growth. We positioned it for exit and sold it at a premium to the market. And we created a bidding war with three companies. And it was a very successful exit because we created a differentiator in the market that companies saw as a value that they could take and they can disseminate across all their companies. So that was kind of the first go-round was that sale. We got all cash, a little bit of earn-out. And let's see, I lasted there, I think, 6 months working for somebody.
Yeah.
And realized, so here I was 35, basically retired. And then what was next?
Yeah. So at age 35, you had your first exit. So you started the business since it was 10 years. You started it at age 25.
Correct.
Okay. You just got married.
Mm-hmm.
You just moved back to Florida.
Yep.
And started a business with you and a partner. Your thoughts were, if my partner could sell books in West Virginia, he could probably sell these kind of things. But right. Did you guys know anything about the staffing industry before landing here? Did you have past experience in that?
No, we had none. So, but what we did have, that's why we went with franchise. They mm-hmm. had manuals on how to do things, how to run things, how to set it up, which was a great starting point. But they also didn't know a lot of the questions, especially when we started to grow. So we actually bought ourselves out of the franchise 5 or 6 years into it and made it our own business.
See, this is something that I hear a lot of successful entrepreneurs do is they take an existing model or something that's proven. And in mm-hmm. your case, it was a franchise where they gave you you learned from their hard work, right?
Correct.
And you guys were starting it. But you said the first couple years were really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple mortgages, lots of, you know, funded by Visa and MasterCard.
Yep.
Now you're newly married, new business, mm-hmm. business partner, and you're going through these kind of challenges. Take me back to those times before you made that major pivot. Talk to me about what it was like in an early marriage, early partnership, early business, age 25, not taking a paycheck. Take us there.
You know, it's interesting. When you're young like that, you're fearless. I mean, you really are. And I don't know what it was, but I always had a sense that we were doing the right thing, and we were gonna make it. And we just worked hard. But I didn't let it affect my family life, which is really, really important. You know, she saw that we were working hard. She was working, so she was bringing a paycheck in. So that's always helpful.
Yeah. She was helping pay the bills, right?
Yes. And so that was helpful. But we always had confidence that we could make it happen. And but it was tough. I mean, you still have to separate. So many people just bury their head in work and they think, you know, 24 hours. No, we'd go work out, we'd run, we'd do something to make it so we cleared our head for a little bit to be able to go. But when you live in the moment, now I look back, I'm like, holy crap, how did I do that? And you think about it, it's tough. It's a very, very tough thing to do. But when you're young, I couldn't imagine doing it today. I couldn't imagine being in that position today. But, you know, perseverance, commitment, you have to believe in what you're doing. You know, so many people give up. You know, you think about how many companies, more companies fail and multiply that by several than actually succeed. Because people give up without really putting the right effort and commitment and have to be committed to making changes.
They have to realize, you know, look in your face and say, well, maybe I'm not doing it right. Maybe there's a better way to do it. We get stubborn as entrepreneurs and we don't listen to advice and we think we're always right. And then the other thing is you always think that you got to be in complete control and you got to touch everything or it's not going to be as good as the way you do it. And that's completely wrong. And that's where the people aspect comes in. You always have to hire people better than you. Never stop hiring people better than you. Because at the end of the day, you can't grow and be successful without successful people with you taking the ride. And that's something we learned early. And we kept on getting better and better at hiring really, really good people.
In the first 3 years, you said that was like the roughest time your business went through.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any days that you were ready to throw in the towel, ready to quit, give it all up?
Can't remember that far back.
I won't ask you how old you are now.
Yeah.
So we won't talk about that.
Yeah, 21.
Okay, very good. Again, right?
Yeah, again. I don't think we ever got to that point that I can remember. You know, it kind of blurs, but it was, I don't really remember it being, I mean, stressful. Yeah, it was tough. And we just always looked for resources. We looked for ways to get through it. So we didn't sit there and say, oh, poor old me. You know, we looked out and we believed in what we were doing. So if we had to reach out to people, if we needed something or we had to do something or we had to get experience for something or expertise, we would do it. So there was always a level of confidence, even though it was shaky times. But it truly made us stronger. It was the turning point. And I always say that with entrepreneurs. There's events that you have throughout business, major events, that are going to be turning points of whether you're going to accelerate and be very successful or they're going to be setbacks. And a lot of people don't know how to deal with those events. They don't do that self-reflection. They don't really look at what the true issues are. And I will tell you, when you're in the day-to-day, it is very, very difficult to think of more than, you know, what this client said or this person said or the step. You're not thinking about strategy. You're not thinking about what's going right or wrong in your business. And by the time you get home, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, you're exhausted. So the last thing you want to do is think about strategy. And that's a really tough thing for people. That's why getting outside people to help you is crucial. And it doesn't have to be a consultant. It could be a friend that's been successful. It's just somebody that can give you a good perspective on what's going on.
Yeah. You talk a lot about self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Before you had that turning point where you guys reached out, you and your partner reached out and said, we need to change our business. We need to have advisors come in. We need to focus on the customer. You said you need to focus more on their strategy, what they want to accomplish, not what you could accomplish for them. You had a turning point. Talk to me about the self-reflection and what you discovered about yourself and maybe even what your partner discovered about, you know, himself too.
And I guess I don't know why I'm always entrepreneur. I mean, my dad became an entrepreneur, but it was really late in life. I mean, I went to his graduation when he got his master's. I mean, you know, he was a Lockheed guy and this and finally broke out. So I don't know if some of that rubbed off or just drove me, but just being around people and seeing people be successful, I wanted to do it. I always had confidence in my ability to get things done. I really did. My partner had a real confidence in his ability to sell. But it was kind of like we taught each other. I mean, he taught me how to sell and be effective because I wanted to be well-rounded. You know, I taught him about reading financials and operational issues and how to deal with people because salespeople are, you know, driven by themselves and their ability to continue to drive themselves. But, you know, a high performer like him is very difficult to expect that out of everybody that works for you. So I think we were a very, very good pair from the standpoint of really helping each other to grow and get through those tough times.
Pretty cool. Do you, when you're investing in a business or helping a business grow, and you look at solopreneurs, like people who starting a business, you know, by themselves or for themselves, do you encourage people, or what's your advice on partnerships or, you know, creating a co-owner, a co-founder? Because you had one.
I've had one, two, three.
Nice.
Three. Each was a unique experience. And I'll probably leave it at that. partnerships are, there's good aspects of partnership and there's tough, because instead of you having the final decision, you have another person that's going to be part of a final decision. Or you could have three people as part of a final decision. We do a lot of companies where there's three or four owners. And I got to tell you, it's very, very difficult to get them on the same page. It's very difficult to get them, because there's a difference between owning a business and being an employee within the business. And so many owners treat both of them as the same. So you could have two owners and one's not participating in the business, then they shouldn't get compensated like an employee. They will get money on distributions paid out of the business. The person that's actively engaged in the business should get a salary, should get a bonus for profitability of the company, and also share the same distribution according to their investment or shares that someone else. That's a hard, hard thing for individuals to deal with. But I was dealing with a person that was a sole proprietor. The problem is you don't have things to bounce off of people. When you have a partner, you can talk. You don't have to agree, but you start talking. And she got herself in a position that business was very successful, and then she decided to keep her eye, take her eye off of the business, get involved in chambers and get involved in this. And whenever you get involved in the community, it's really, really good, but they will take and take of your time. And she took her eye off her business. She didn't have anyone to talk to. She had me. She saw me speak at an engagement. She came running at me afterwards and said, look, I'd really like to have a conversation. We got on the phone and I just gave her advice. I said, listen, get rid of everything that isn't related to your business. Let's look, tell me where you're at. Let's talk about your team. I gave her advice on, let's go back, touch all your clients, see how much additional revenue you can get. We talked about a growth plan. I said, you know, are your staff performing and when she needs to bring in the next staff? And we set goals and we set parameters. And at the end of the conversation, you could hear the big sigh of relief, because she was felt like she had a direction. She had a plan. Now, she's got to execute on it, but some of the things she was thinking in her head, she was right in what she thought of what she needed to do, but she needed to hear it from that other person.
Sure. Yeah, and the accountability of a consultant, an advisor, another partner is extremely valuable, because we're not supposed to do things by ourselves. It's lonely. Sometimes we get in our own head. We're working from, 5 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, and we have no time to create the strategies or do self-reflection. So having other people, whether they're advisor, partner, and such, is really good to surround yourself with. You had an exit at age 35, and you ultimately said, I kind of like retired at age 35. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what it's like at age 35 to retire and like not need to, go work right away. Like, mm-hmm. Talk to us, what was that like?
You think it's like going to be the best day of your life, and it's like that for a couple of weeks, and you do some traveling, you do some trips, but it's kind of like, think about, you've done something consistently, religiously, and then it's done. And all of a sudden I had to book my own trips. I didn't have an assistant anymore. I had to book my own trips. I didn't even know how to do anything. I mean, it was really, yeah, really bad, because when you're running a business, it's important that your assistant takes all of the administrative stuff that runs your personal and your professional life in order for you to be more effective and be in front of the people that you need to be. Anytime you have to do those things, it's very difficult. So started hanging out with my wife a lot more, and she was playing tennis, and I would go watch her, and then I started hanging out with her girlfriends and her, because all my friends were working. Nobody, yeah, was, it was just me, and even my partner stayed on with the company longer, so he was working. So it was literally myself.
Was your wife getting sick of it? Like, hey, why don't you go find a job?
Yeah. She goes, you got to get out of here. I don't want you hanging out with my friends. I love you. I want to see you, but not this much.
Yeah.
I got my life, you have your life. So the first thing I did was I hired my assistant to work in my house. I had an office in the house.
Yeah.
And so I was getting a lot of calls from people saying, hey, can you help me do what you did with your business, with my business? So I started looking at some deals, and there was only one really in the business, the staffing business that I was in. Most of them were other companies, healthcare companies. I had invested in healthcare. I was familiar with healthcare. There was other businesses. But so I went out and did some consulting and started doing some deals, but working out of the house. Soon realized that I didn't like working out of the house because you couldn't detach work from home.
Yeah.
That was really difficult. So I got an office. In fact, in this building where we're sitting right now, I bought it because it's close to my golf course right down the street. And I figured, you know what? So I had an assistant. It was mostly setting up social schedules and working a little bit, you know, trips here and there. And then I got the itch again. I had a guy come to me, and it was in the same business. And he goes, I got two sons, and we started this business, and I'm not really involved. I had my own stuff. But I'd really like you to mentor them, train them, and help them grow. And I said, sounds great. So about 6 months into it, he goes, hey, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 50% of the business, and I want you to do what you did with your last business. And, he caught me on the right day, and I said, sounds great. So we took that company from a couple million to over $150 million in 5 years, which was 3 times the size of my company, the last one that took 10 years. Big difference. I knew what I was doing, knew what we needed to do, used the same formula of success, the same differentiator. And I was kind of shocked because it was maybe 5 or 6 years later. But no one had taken what we did and utilized it successfully because it was a big paradigm shift in the marketplace. But the true differentiator wasn't in what we were actually delivering. It was how we were delivering it and the conversations we were having. Instead of dealing with HR people, we're now dealing with CEOs. We're talking about strategy and development. So that led me into that business. And like I said, we were in 13 states, 30 offices. Could have taken it easily to $1 billion. There was plenty of juice, but I didn't. My kids were young. I didn't have the desire to do that. I didn't want to be on a plane. As it was, I was traveling to California. I was traveling to New Jersey. I was traveling to our others, Texas. And I was like, no, that's really not what I want to do. So it was the same thing. We had another exit, got a bidding war, all cash deal with a little bit of earn out because I've learned you want to get as much cash as you can. But you have to position your business for exit, which is so crucial. You're going to be in a negotiation. And the other thing is you don't want to be the person negotiating. You always want a buffer between you. You got to stay focused on your business. You have to make sure that your business continues to grow. If they see any chink in the armor, if sales start coming down, they're going to ding you with you know, ad backs and chargebacks and lower multiples. And you just don't want to be in that position. So you always want to be in a position of strength. Obviously, for me, the second exit, it didn't mean as much as the first because I was well off from the first to the people with me. It was their first, and there was a dynamic of dealing with partners and making sure. You always got to realize that you may have to walk from a deal. But as being on the other side of buying companies like we did, you get to a point where that owner gets to an emotional commitment to do a transaction. And people buying your businesses, they see that. That's what they live for. Because then they're going to pull up because you're so committed. They're going to take you to a point where you never thought you were going to be, and you go ahead and do it because the business is faltering, you haven't been involved, and you're emotionally committed to a sale. So it's tough, and I know I digressed a little off of the course, but you know. So the second one was less time, knew the formula for success, and that's why you talked about advisors earlier. Really, really important that you get advisors that have a track record of success. I mean, obviously, I've been through three personal growth and exits. I've been involved in hundreds of transactions on the buy and sell side. So when I meet a lot of companies, there's a comfort level in that, hey, I'm talking to someone that's been there, done that. You should have that same feeling whoever you get in front of. And it's not just a business advisor like or a business consultant like I am, or business advisor. You need a attorney that's done mergers and acquisitions. You need an accountant that's been through transactions. You need a personal wealth manager to figure out, am I going to have enough money? That was one thing I would tell you. It's funny. When I got the first exit and I got a wealth manager, I thought I was spending like this amount of money, you know, personally. I had no idea. When I did all my budget, it was twice the amount I thought I was spending. So can you imagine if someone's selling a business, they think they spend this amount of money and it's going to carry them through retirement, and all of a sudden their expenses far exceed what it was, and next thing you know, they don't have enough money to sell. And we've been with companies that have been at position. So people always ask me, well, when should I start planning my exit? And honestly, it's the day you start your first business plan. Because if you don't set your company up that right way and you don't grow it the right way, you're never going to achieve where you need to be.
So building it to sell, essentially, built to exit, is kind of the focus as you're building out your business plan. What was one error? Because you said you underestimated your expenses by, you know, by 100%, right? So yes. What was the biggest, if you're allowed to talk about it, like what was the biggest mistake you made after the exit, not budgeting correctly or not planning correctly?
But it wasn't as important. I was okay. I still was fine from the sale price. But I will tell you some of the mistakes I did is putting $100,000 here or $500,000 here to different things. People come, oh, I got this great idea.
Great ideas.
I got this, I got that. So I'm doing all these different throwing money out, and it just was, I'm like, wake up one day and said, none of these have made it. Yeah. And I started realizing that, you know what continues to make it for me? Things that I personally am involved with. And I need to look at these investments the same way I looked at my business. You're banking on people, but do they have the right product and service? Do they have the right structure to build and grow this thing successfully? Do they have the right people to make it happen? Do they have processes that are scalable? Do they have systems that work? Do you have the right reporting in place to make good decisions on growth and so forth? And you have to start evaluating these things on that. And startups, I mean, they're very, very difficult. They're tough to invest in, you know? So even if people are really, really good, the chances for failure are significant. So, you know, you have to evaluate those things. And I didn't do that. I just, let's do this, let's do that. So you learn about that.
And it's costly. Those are expensive,
costly,
right?
And then, you know, investing your money, another thing. At that time, it was peak market time. I'll never forget the guys wanted me to take my check and put it into their stock in the company. I'm like, no, thank you. That's good. Give me some shares or options, and I'll do that through incentives. And my partner's like, oh, I'm going to give them. I said, no, you're not. Don't give them a good large piece of your check. You don't put that kind of money into a single. And for a couple of years, they did well, and then the 2000 when the market turned the other direction, which you know it's going to happen, you know, they lost a lot of the money. So you got to manage your personal wealth and make sure you have that wealth manager that can steer you. You never can predict the market, but you need to have safeguards that protect, you know, the principle that you're going to use for retirement or for your growth.
Yeah. So you've had three successful growth and exits. Mm-hmm. You've helped hundreds of transactions on the buy, sell, mergers, acquisition mm-hmm. side, and which brings us into the business that you are now. Tell us a little bit about RVR and the kind of companies that you like to work with and what you like to do with them.
Right. So after the other thing I realized too, after I sold the second one in 2007, right before the market took a dive, I knew it. Yeah, I planned it. It was perfect.
Great planning on
your part. Yeah, January, February, I think we sold all cash, put it under the mattress, wait for all of it to go, and then it reinvested. So, yeah, I looked like a... But I did become a student of understanding economic cycles, because it's really, really important to make sure that your company is flexible enough and you have the ability to scale up or down based upon what's going on in the marketplace. Sure. And you also need to understand what's your client doing in the when the market's good or it's bad, and how can you help them navigate through that, because they're looking for answers. So at the end of it, I knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't want a big company. I didn't want to travel. So really got back to the consulting side. But I said I wanted it to be different this time. I wanted to build a consulting business, and I didn't expect it to build very big, but the idea was get people that come in as consultants that were very good at what they did, But train them on the strategy, train them on the growth, train them to think like an entrepreneur. So my development of them was a big thing. Also creating a real work-life balance. But the other two things were the community, giving back to the community. I feel a lot of people, we work hard when you're younger and all you do is focus on your work and then, you know, a little bit of socially, but you don't think about the community. You don't think about going out and making a difference. And I started a school for children with motor disabilities in 18 years ago, whatever that makes it, 2000, because I had a son that was premature, 3 months early, wasn't supposed to live, had all these challenges, that's cerebral palsy, and all I kept hearing is, he'll never do this, he'll never do that. And it was weird because he was born right after I sold my first business, so I had the means to go out and seek alternatives. So my wife was Hungarian. She identified this program through her relatives of how they were treating and looking at people with motor disabilities different and saying, you know, they can do things. Everything's about can do. So we did a summer program for 6 weeks. I paid for a conductor to come over. Unbelievable results. Unbelievable results. And, you know, I was going to have the person come over selfishly for my son alone. And after seeing those kids, I'm like, wow. This impact. I mean, there's kids that couldn't even crawl, would leave walking. I mean, and it's only because they were given the opportunity of how to do it. When you have a motor disability, you know, easy for us to raise our arm or leg, but when you have a motor disability, it's a slow process. You have to go step by step, how to, you know, position your foot, how to position your seating, how to start to lift your body, to do these things. So there's multiple steps that takes a long time. So this program was 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. So we've been growing it ever since. Now we see over 300 kids a year from all over the world. We have built such an amazing, we have over 100 people working for us on a daily basis. We have had families from all over the country just uproot and move to be in our program because it was the best outcome for our kids. So it changed my life. It changed my wife's life. It changed my children's life. And I want people in business to understand. So from a growth factor and what I've done, that's by far the most, not the most profitable because it's a not-for-profit, but by far the most successful in the outcomes and the results because I've got people working there, you know, close to minimum wage, but they're passionate and committed to making a difference in people's lives. And I take my staff and I said, no, you're not just going to write checks. You're not going to bring clothes and drop it off. You're physically going to go and serve people or teach people or get involved. Because when you get involved and you see the difference you can make in people's life, it changes everything.
For those listening in on this show, I'm sitting across from Joe and he's talking about business. And when he starts talking about this nonprofit, like he lit up, like a huge smile on his face. And you could just tell that this is something that he's really proud of. So let's go there, Joe, as we... you know, we've got a little bit of time left. Let's talk about your nonprofit. What's the name of your nonprofit?
It's CECO short, but it's Conductive Education Center of Orlando.
And you help over 300 kids a year who have
motor disabilities. Actually, adults now. We work with Parkinson's. We're working towards stroke victims. But cerebral palsy is a lifelong condition. So we've developed, we dealt with the kids, we saw our kids getting bigger, we had to keep moving locations. Then my son now is 22 years old, and we looked at the adult community and options, nothing out there. But it just incorporates physical, cognitive, and social abilities. I mean, you're saying you were in the fitness space. You know that you can't just work the physical aspect to get the results you want. You need to have the education of what you're doing and what you're trying, but also the socialization of people to cheer you on and get you and drive you. So that interaction, if you don't have those three things working together, then you're not going to get the best outcome for yourself. So you take that and apply that to retirement or whatever you do for all these people. And that's it. That's a big change, big, big change. So we've incorporated that though into RVR. And we take those same principles even to the businesses that we deal with. So we work with probably about 30 to 40 people that work with us in the firm. We're in 5 or 6 different states, clients in different states. We have probably about 30 to 40 different clients. But it's that same thing of genuinely caring But it's not just about here's a blueprint. It's about execution. All our clients will tell you, we come up with solutions, we help them execute, and we help them get an outcome. Just like our school, what we do every day with these kids. It's all about a positive outcome for people. Mm.
So as you're building and growing RVR, and for Seco, is that the name of it?
Yeah.
What's your future look like? Because we still don't know how old you are. Yeah. But what's your future look like?
I don't even know how I am. I think I'm 56.
Okay.
So, and I keep on thinking I'm a year younger, and I figure that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, again, I realize that I don't want to retire, but I do want to get in a position. So, on the RVR side, we're growing and developing talent. The goal is to have eventually 6 partners that are, you know, be a general partner and a managing partner, and have 6 partners, and eventually that creates the succession plan. So it's growing talent in the organization to provide an exit. On the Seco side, my big thing was sustainability, because it's a very costly program. So we do get some state funding. We have to raise funds, but we actually just purchased our building, which we have a mortgage on it, but we were able to get a lot of founders and people involved to put money towards it. And it's a big cost savings. It's significant within the next couple of years, within the next 5 years of outright owning that building. This will be a sustainable program. And that's my goal, is to make it sustainable. It's every child or adult that has a motor disability that can benefit from this program should have it. So we're trying to get into school systems. We're getting into hospitals and rehab facilities. We're getting it out there. So my goal is take the torch as far as I can get it. One, make it sustainable so it's there forever. And then, obviously, we got a great board. We got great committees. We got great people. And creating a succession plan where I'd move from CEO of that organization to a chairman role. And then, eventually, whatever, just as a donor and a supporter and a advocate for the program.
Talk to us. Last question.
Sure.
Actually, man, I got 2 more. Gosh darn it. All right, I'm just going to choose one of them. So talk to us about the importance, because community service and giving is so valuable to you. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the benefits of that. So the people who are listening in the audience or who are kind of like thinking, you know, maybe they had an exit, maybe they have some extra time, extra resources, and they're thinking about getting involved in giving, mm-hmm. not just stroking a check, but mm-hmm. like actually tactically, like you do with your employees, of going and serving people. Right. What are the benefits to the human, and challenge the people in the audience who are at that stage where they can do that. Challenge them about the benefits of giving or the responsibility of giving. Like, talk to them.
It is a responsibility, but it's a blessing. It truly is. I mentor kids at Crummer, at Rollins. I mentor kids that are growing in businesses. Obviously what we do with kids in the community. And I got to tell you, I get more out of it than, I know they get a lot out of it, but just to be able to help them and see, just like you said, my eyes lit up on Seco because it's a passion of mine. It's the same with these kids, giving them, ideas, suggestions, wisdom. I mean, the one thing is, believe me, I didn't do everything right by far. And I learned more from my mistakes. And that's probably something entrepreneurs can learn more than anything. Mistakes are good. They're helpful only if you take them, learn from them, and adjust for them. A lot of people will repeat them over and over, and that's where a problem. So for people that have time, have retired, and you're looking for things to do, go mentor, go be a teacher, go help people. You don't have to go and work, for motor disabilities. That's something that was a personal thing and became a bigger challenge. There are so many ways you can help. And I always like look at youth and how much you can help. And yes, we deal with entrepreneurs as well. But that's where it starts. If we can build a good foundation, if we can help them with this crazy world we live in, and deal with all the information out there and help them make good decisions and right decisions, that's going to change the world. And yes, you can do it one person at a time.
That's awesome. Joe, for people who are listening in who want to learn more about RVR, mm-hmm. the business services from growth to exit, mm-hmm. and all the strategies between there, and for people who are also interested in the nonprofit side of Joe and your world at Seco, where can people go to find more about you and the things that you're involved in?
Yeah, so our website, I think it's rvrteam.com is the website. You can learn, our bios are on there, a little bit about our story and information there. Heck, they can contact us through that, and we can have great conversations. CECO, you could actually just look up CECO. It's a program for children and adults with motor disabilities. It's easy to get to, and there's great heartwarming stories. There's a big social we got in November 8th that you can learn a tremendous amount about. So both those ways are, and just, I don't even know if we talked about that, but small to mid-market companies, we've dealt with companies that are over $1 billion and as small as $5 million. It's entrepreneurs that want to accelerate growth. They have challenges that they need to fix, or they're wanting to plan that exit. So we're available for those.
Very cool. And what we'll do is I'll work with your team to get all the links and such, and we'll put them in the show notes. So for people who are listening, if you want to connect with Joe and his team on the RVR side of the consulting business to learn, grow, and scale your business, and then ultimately plan for the exit, you'll be able to connect with him directly there. And then also, if you want to know more about the CECO and the nonprofit side, go straight to the show notes, click on those links, make it easy for you guys. Joe, this has been a great conversation, and thank you for what you're doing here in the community, in this world, helping entrepreneurs and helping just people, helping serve people. We appreciate you.
Well, you're welcome. I enjoy it.
Yeah, awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, listening into this Orlando Entrepreneur Show, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation with Joe. My ask to you is that you reach out to our guests and let them know that you've heard them on the show, and that what they're saying is important to you, and that you connect and lift them up and encourage them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in. We hope you've enjoyed this, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. We'll see you, Joe. Bye, everyone.
Take care.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.